We ready for y'all.
You can't go from Marvin Gaye to that. I'm thinking you about to do some Marvin Gaye serenade.
No, that's not like that.
Shout out your boy too.
Oh yeah, I don't want to say his name the wrong way.
Look it up real quick.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. Go ahead. Yeah, give me the intro while I look it up.
Yeah, so she been vibing to this brother who did a tribute to Marvin Gaye. And it's very hard to duplicate that or get close to that. So we've been rocking to that all morning. We just want to give him some love so y'all could go support him. He ain't super big yet. We got like 60,000 followers.
Yeah.
So make sure y'all go hit up his page and follow him and bump some of that pure classic music that's still being made today.
His name is October London.
It's a fire name too.
It's a fire name, October London. He has that Marvin Gaye feel song, and it's just so nice. And as I was washing dishes and making juices and stuff today, listening to it, I'm like, hold on, this is a real singer. And one thing about me when it comes to music, it's rare that I get excited.
Right.
Like, honestly, since you've been here, you don't really hear me play music like that. And it has to be a song that I'm extremely excited about, especially new music, for me to keep it on repeat. And I've kept that song on repeat, so yeah, he's fire.
And if you see this, come on the podcast. We realize we are at that point where we are able to create at the speed of intention, which we'll talk about in a little while. So October, come through, bro.
Absolutely.
I think that's a good, well, first.
Welcome to another podcast of Remembering Me, the Soul Healing Podcast. I'm Candace Love.
I am Brick City Buddha, a.k.a. Dox, your boy. I thought you was going to say it for me.
Your boy.
I think that's a great segue. We got a few different topics to talk about today, so this may end up being a two-part conversation.
Yeah.
But we'll go back to the car. First, I want to start with what we just were speaking about, the fact that we are creating at the speed of intention. We don't necessarily have to plan things out or to even speak things into existence. Case in point, you just had a very big moment.
Oh, I did. Mm-hmm. I did just have a very big moment.
Right. So I'll preface it and then you can follow up and fill in the dots. But, you know, Candace is in the space of extreme rapid expansion right now. And the version of her maybe a year ago, maybe even less than that, probably wouldn't have done this. But she saw the brother 19 Keys, shout out to 19 Keys and your whole staff, who's been doing tremendous work in our community. If y'all never heard of 19 Keys, you're probably under a rock. But if not, go check him out. Check out what his output is as far as infusing knowledge and wisdom into Black culture. Very big. He got near 1 million followers. He's been doing this for a long time. And you saw he was on tour, that his tour was finishing up in Houston. And without even thinking about it, you just send him a DM like, I feel like I could provide something to that stage. If you would have me, you know, I would love to participate. He hit you back within 2 minutes. Yeah. Somebody with 1 million followers, 19 Keys. If y'all know, y'all already understand what it is. And you didn't have time to psych yourself out. You didn't have time to say, you know what, he's not going to hit me back or it's not worth doing. You went at the speed of intention. You did what Source told you to do and speak on what came of that.
Yeah, you know, I never do things that are that bold. Mm-hmm. So reaching out to him in general was a big deal for me, especially because, you know, I don't want to slide into nobody's DMs, you know, so it was a big deal. And I was really intentional about what I said. And I just told him, hey, I love what you do. If at any point I can provide more to whatever it is that you're doing in the realm of healing, growing and evolving, then just let me know. So it really wasn't even about the tour. Mm. This was more so about, I saw he did things like podcasts.
Right.
And, you know, it's a lot of masculine energy when we go into group economics and, you know, money and society and community. But the aspect of emotional healing isn't always a component. So that's what
it's
I thought.
Usually
it was,
not.
Yeah, so that's where, you know, I thought that if anything did come from it, that would be the avenue.
Mm-hmm.
But he hit me back in like a couple minutes and was like, yeah, I'll send you all the details. I'll be in Houston. You can speak on my tour. And his manager hit me back like within the next 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And 15 minutes later, guest speaking on his world tour.
Got the flyer and all that.
Got the flyer, everything handed to me. So to the point, I'm like, oh, snap.
Right.
I got to speak at his tour. It's one thing to open yourself up. It's like, oh, I need to plan what I'm going to say.
Right.
Yeah.
And before we even speak on that aspect, there's two rules that I give my clients when necessary as homework for the sessions that I have with them via counseling. And one of them that's been really big in my life is what I call the 5-second rule. And the 5-second rule is pretty not fool, not when it go to the ground and, you know, my full good 5 seconds, I'm straight. 5-second rule being when you have purified your intention enough, when you have emptied out the extraneous desire to know you have like a streamlined approach to what you're supposed to be doing. Not everybody is ready for the 5-second rule. You have to go through some purification. But when you get to that point and you feel like spirit is really speaking through you on a consistent basis, when you receive a download, within 5 seconds, just go with it. Don't worry about what it's going to look like, how you're going to plan it, what's going to be the results of it. And you did exactly that. We never even talked about the 5-second rule.
Right.
But you are in that space of your trust, your confidence, and your relationship with Source and Spirit. And with doing that, you kind of circumvent the limiting beliefs that your mind would try to talk you out of doing something like hitting the 19 keys. Like, yo, I feel like I need to be on your stage. He's not going to hit me back, all this other stuff. None of that was the case. So that's something you guys could start to practice. First, the purification of your spirit to be able to actually hear the messages. And then when you hear them, not to allow your ego to get in way. Just go with it within 5 seconds. So with that being said, this is your first huge speaking engagement. So after the dust settled of, oh, he hit me back, I'm about to be on stage. Then the reality sets in, I'm about to be on stage.
Right.
Talk to us about how that downloaded into your system and all the emotions that came with realizing you was about to have a moment this big.
Yeah, you know, well, I had told myself moving forward that before I reached out to him, that I was going to become more intentional with acknowledging my reach and more intentional with acknowledging the spaces that I have the ability to be a part of. And so I knew that there are a few people that I'd like to reach out to. Mm-hmm. And I also told myself that I know that those interactions or anything that I do works when I feel good, when I feel proud of what I'm doing, when I'm eating in a way that reflects how I should be eating. And when my aura just feels healthy, and in that moment, he came across my timeline, and I'm like, I did a self scan. I'm like, no, I feel good. My energy feels good. My energy feels like it is purified enough to reach out to someone for an opportunity so I can possibly receive the outcome that I'm looking for.
Right.
So I've always been conscious of that, even like with my skincare products or anything that I do. If I don't feel good energetically, I don't do it, because I'm clear that that's the energy that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
So once I did my self-scan and it came back, great. Like, yeah, you can talk on my tour. I was like, oh, dang, what I'm going to talk about? I was like, I ain't never talked in front of this many people before. Right. So now the excitement was great, but the excitement quickly turned into anxiousness because it was another thing that I had to prepare for that I wasn't quite sure if I was actually prepared for.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is fear too strong of a word to throw in there too?
So we can use the word fear, and then maybe on a scale of 1 to 10 with fear, I would say I was about a 4.
Okay. So but fear was wrapped up in
absolutely.
It. All right. So when you started to work on what you wanted to present, what was that process like? What did you learn about yourself and about being in positions like this? Like, we dream of moments.
Yeah.
Like being on the stage with somebody like 19 Keys. What did you learn about about yourself through the process before you actually got to the moment?
Yeah, so everyone knows I speak candidly about my addiction to alcohol. I'm 5 years sober now, but in the process of me drinking, I drank so much that my memory became quite an issue. Mm. So I drank so much that I would be in mid-conversation and completely blank.
Right.
I would forget what I was about to say. I would forget the next word. I would forget what we were talking about. And so I couldn't tell people what was going on because I didn't know what was going on. I just knew that I was losing my memory. Mm. And it was extremely embarrassing. So I would just stop talking,
right,
and I wouldn't really know where to go. I couldn't find the next sentence or the next word. And so after I stopped drinking, it got better, but it still happens. It still happens to this day. And I'll even say things like to my mom, did you notice it? I may even say it to you every now and then, like, did you notice it? It's like a space in memory that happens, and it's not really a lapse in memory that happens. There's not really much I can do about it, but just give myself grace.
Right.
And I'm sure it's the residue as well that comes here and there. And so my biggest fear was, what if I get up there and I forget everything that I'm about to say?
Right.
Like, what if I just hit this lapse in memory and I don't know how to recover right. from that? And then the anxiousness or the nervousness that I feel kind of like consumes me, and I just break down crying on stage because I'm embarrassed. Like, I went through the whole scenario. Oh, what would have happened if I lost my memory? And so I recognized after talking with you, I spoke with one of my friends who is Miss, I don't want to get it wrong, it's Miss USA or Miss America.
And you want to shout her out too?
Yeah. Thank you so much for being present. Like, Deshauna Barber, she is so beautiful. If you follow her on Instagram, this is what she does,
right.
public speaking. So initially, when he first said yes, the first person I reached out to was her. Like, hey, can you give me some pointers? Because I was nervous about losing my memory.
Right.
And you both said the exact same thing. Have a story. Have a timeline of how things will go, like your outline. And I just followed that. And I recognized that I attempted to have multiple days where I could prepare.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't happened, okay? The days that I had to prepare, none of it happened. I didn't get to prepare until the morning of.
Right.
So I had about, 5 hours
right.
to prepare what I was going to say, to put my outline in order, to have my stories put in place, my intention behind what I was going to say.
Mm.
And so the process and what I learned in the process is just the remembrance of it ain't nothing that I can't do.
Right.
And it's okay if nervousness is present. It's okay if that anxious energy is present, because that's what we spoke about when we talked about conflict and how conflict feels so overwhelming in my body.
Right.
And I'm fearful of the explosion that can happen. And this felt like conflict in my body. But there's nothing that I can do with the energy, but just direct it to a certain place, but I still felt it in my body.
Mm.
So this was more practice to get used to allowing that surge of energy just to be present and just give it grace.
And it was dope on my behalf. Like I told you, I enjoyed being a coach. You know, I've been the quote unquote star player for so long, whether it was music, being on tour, performing in front of 20,000 people, speaking for a long time. Like my first speaking engagement, I was like 4 years old. My sister was supposed to do the I Have a Dream speech. And my parents didn't even realize every time she would rehearse, I was in my head downloading. So when she kind of hit a spot where she didn't remember and she like ran off, I went up there, grabbed the mic and finished the speech. I'm like 4 or 5 years old. So I kind of always just been comfortable in these spaces, and I've learned a lot that I was able to kind of pass over to you. So to see you go through that whole process, that's still necessary, right? People, the thing with nervous energy and anxious energy, especially when you got to perform, is because of our perception of it. We think it's a bad thing because it don't feel good, right? Like you were saying, those surges come. And I told you, I kind of gave you a roadmap, like, there's going to be a few times this week where you're going to feel like you just lost your breath thinking about what
Absolutely.
Could possibly happen in that moment.
Yeah,
was that correct?
Sure. Yeah.
Right. So we kind of all go through this. And I even went through this I don't know if I still go through it because I have such a beautiful relationship with it now, and I'm so comfortable with being myself. But that started to shift when my perception of quote unquote nervous energy started to change. Nervous us just means a bundle, a collection of nerves. And nerves is always doing something in your body in some way, shape, or form, downloading and processing information. So when it's time for you to do something big, you need that surge. You need all those different nerves to start to come online and go to a higher level of capacity for you to be super sharp. I got to the point where I started to invite that. When it would come, I knew exactly what that was. And I would ride those waves of what we would call nervous energy. I would welcome it and ride the wave into whatever it is I had to do in front of a bunch of people. So to see you go through that process and get to the moment right before we was on stage, you know, you had your own dressing room, like you was real fancy back there, and we was able to walk out on stage, you had your moment, you visualized what you wanted to visualize, and then when we came back, you had 15 minutes, and when you was going over what you wanted to do, you was like, all right, so I'm gonna talk about this, dot, 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 and I'm gonna talk about this. You had like 9-10 this's, and I'm like, yo, you only got 15 minutes. You like, it's too much? And I didn't tell you it was too much. I just told you to be prepared for if you needed to condense it. So 5 minutes prior to going on stage, and they tell you, like, low-key, you got, like, 12 minutes. And then you get right behind the curtain, and the people before you going long, and they, like, low-key, you got, like, 10 minutes.
Really
now,
eight,
right?
If we're being honest, yeah.
Exactly. And I say all that to say that preparation is beautiful. Preparation is key in life. But you do still have to leave some semblance of space, especially when you function as a conduit, as much as we do, where you allow spirit to flow through you. Sometimes the preparation can put up walls. It can put up barriers and impediments to what source actually wants to say through you in that moment. It was maybe 70% of the things that you had written down that didn't come out, but what you said was perfect for that moment.
Yeah, and to a large degree, too, like, when it comes to me performing, I've been singing my whole life.
Right.
So it's nothing for me to get on a stage and sing because I know the ebbs and flows of my voice. Right. I'm clear however I start if I'm going to be able to hit the high note at the end.
Right.
Like, I know exactly what's going to happen with my voice, if I'm going to have to change a tune. I know how to add to and take away. I know how to change my register or go into falsetto. I know if I have the ability to go into falsetto or if I just need to do something completely different. So that's easy also because I'm performing. I don't really have to, like, embody a whole nother person.
Right. And string all these words together.
Yeah.
And so,
it's just a song. And, you know, once you feel good in a song, you can't wait to get to the high note.
Right.
But when it came to memory, I was like, oh, man, like, what if I forget? And the only thing that I could think to do to help with my nerves was to give myself permission to be myself. And that was to acknowledge. Before I went into any spill about anything, I made sure I acknowledged to the crowd that I was vulnerable and that I felt nervous and that I was scared. And that gave them the opportunity to want to hold space for me. It gave them the opportunity to want to cheer me on. But I received so many messages after that was like, I never expected for you to start off by saying how nervous you were. And a few ladies reached out to me and they were like, the fact that you showed vulnerability, but you continued in your power.
Yeah, you're strong the whole
showed
time.
Me that I can still express. And what I told them was, you can express how you feel in vulnerability, and that way you don't have to hold on to it. And then you can continue doing what you were going to do. So I expressed that I was nervous, and then I continued my powerful speech.
Right.
And the ladies were like, that taught me that I can express how I'm vulnerable. I'm afraid, I'm scared, or possibly afraid of being hurt. And I can still continue being strong. I can still continue showing my strength, and my vulnerability doesn't equal weakness. And so that was the biggest key that I took away from speaking, is to really show up and be my authentic self. Vulnerability has always been my superpower.
Right. And in that capacity, you can't forget how to be yourself. So we could do all this preparing. Like you said, a lot of people probably deal with that. The biggest fear, at least in Western civilization, is public speaking. So when you just understand that you trust yourself and you get in that moment, like I had a speaking engagement with my brother AJ McQueen from out here, Houston rapper. He was actually on stage with you as well after you. Yeah. And he had an event called God Talk a few months ago, my first speaking engagement out here. And, you know, I did my thing, you know, like they had to tell me get off the stage at a certain point because I was going even over then. What they asked me to do, I had like 15 minutes. I ended up going 20. It was beautiful though. It was necessary. People had a lot of questions about what I spoke about afterwards. But after the event, you was like, when did you plan all that? I didn't even see you practicing or nothing like that. And it's because I've had so much practice understanding when I get to the moment, when y'all get to that moment, if you just allow yourself to be yourself, you ain't got to remember. I didn't know what half the time when I'm teaching and in that moment, I didn't know what I was going to speak about until my mouth opened. I even started my speaking on that night with a minute of silence, right? And I explained to people that I was comfortable breaking a social contract of being on the stage, and if you're the person in the center of the room, you're on the stage, people expecting you to say something, to entertain, to perform. I'm not in the business of performing for anybody. Whether I'm on the stage with Oprah, I'm always going to be myself. So when you do that, there is no fear that's going to overtake what you need to do in that moment. And even with the engagement, the day prior, was it the day prior or 2 days prior when we got into it?
No, it was the day before.
The day before.
The day I was supposed to be practicing.
Right. Supposed to be practicing. Supposed to be going to get your nails done. You missed your whole nail appointment because we ended up getting into it. And that even, like, so I'll give a little bit of context to that. That stemmed from I had a moment where I'm dealing with, of course, still navigating this thing with my son being long distance and being doing my best to input as much as I can, not physically being there. So I had a rough moment. I had a rough couple days where that emotion and the logistics of that was bogging me down. I did what I needed to do. It was nighttime. I had went and took a walk. I was out all day, came back. Candace wasn't here. I was sitting in this seat back there, and I was just trying to clear my energy. I was meditating. Usually, I will put my headphones on, but she wasn't in the house. I didn't know when she would be back. So I just raw dogged. I didn't even think about all of that. I just needed to meditate. I needed to get some energy off of me. When she came in the house, I was about 5 minutes away from finishing my meditation. It was a guy that I was listening to. She had just finished doing a whole 2-hour book club thing. You had worked all day. You was tired. You was ready to relax, understandably so. So to accommodate me, she went and took the headphones and put them in my ears. And then she went upstairs and she started to do her thing, watch TV. Any other moment, there has never been a moment where you've known me to not be able to meditate through anything, right? I was already depleted this day. I didn't have much energy, and it threw me off in that moment. So I went to communicate to her after I was done. I wasn't able to finish. I just kind of stopped it, and I sent her a text. Like, next time I would appreciate if you did ... I had no issue with what she did. I wasn't mad at you, which we was able to get to later on. But in that moment, being that you're my wife, being that you are an emotional alchemist and you're so open to being able to read people's energy, I hadn't told you what went on that day, but you felt me. You knew it was a lot going on within my system. So even though I didn't intend or didn't feel any angst towards you, you felt the residue that was placed otherwhere, and it kind of overlapped what I was asking you in that moment to do. And that pissed you off, right? And initially, you were still trying to navigate through it. I was also acknowledging I could have hit you and asked, yo, are you close to the house? Just to navigate, should I put the headphones on? I did acknowledge I should have just put the headphones on, not knowing when you was going to come home. So I wasn't just coming at you, but it felt like it to you because you felt the other energy that was placed elsewhere. That ended up turning into something. And the next day we started to get into the conversation, and I'm going to let you put your nuggets in as well, but to make a long story long, eventually we got to the point where you released a level of rage I never seen you release, and that you indicated afterwards you never done in your life. Like, full out, like, tears, spit, like, literally, like somebody will look if they wanted to kill you. It was that coming towards me. And we was already maybe an hour into, you know, the kind of back and forth. To a certain degree, voices had raised, but we do pretty good with just staying engaged. And I was proud of you because usually with conflict, you know, you talk about how you don't want to continue. You would walk away and then come back and we would keep working through it. But in that moment, you broke. A version of you broke open and you not just released what you felt with me in that moment, a lifetime of rage that you have never been able to release came right at me, right? And in that moment, it was like, I know what this is. I know this doesn't just have to do with the logistics of what we're talking about. I know this isn't just you being angry with me. I knew that was a lifetime of rage that needed to come out, and it hurt. Like, it was breaking me open as you was doing it, but simultaneously, I was still able to have the understanding, the empathy, the compassion to allow you to get it out. And that greatly impacted you being able to go on that stage and do what you needed to do because you broke up open to a new level of yourself that was comfortable with whatever version of yourself was present. And in that moment, it was, right? So I want you to talk about how that moment correlated to you being able to have what you had on that stage.
You know, I actually didn't correlate that to what I had on the stage. Mm-hmm. But I guess, like, you know, in those moments, so I wasn't like pissed. I wasn't upset, like, or angry from the message that you sent. It was just the energy that was behind it that felt like frustration and felt misplaced.
Mm-hmm. And that I was nitpicking you.
Yes, yeah. It felt misplaced. It mm-hmm. felt like whatever you were experiencing with your son and your son's mom mm-hmm. Was being the energy of it, not necessarily what you requested, even though, you know, typically you do meditate mm-hmm. Within any environment, mm-hmm. but it just felt misplaced. I didn't know what you were experiencing, but I knew I felt something that was abnormal.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm upstairs watching my show. I just finished talking for 2 hours. I'm finally relaxing. And I hadn't left the house. I was just next door.
Right.
So that energy, even, you know, when you sent the message, I had to process that energy to the point I had to pause my show and really acknowledge that there was some energy present, which is how I knew, because I was in a nice place, which is also how I knew that you had energy that you were processing, because it was now coming up within me. And then I actually don't even remember like how we got to the space we got to the next day. Oh, yes, I do remember. But we got to the next day and it was,
how did we get there?
Yeah, we got there because I felt energy from you again. Mm-hmm. And I asked you if you were okay while I was working and you said yes. And then I asked you again and you said yes. And I know the energy that I feel on top of like the tone of voice that you had, which mm-hmm. wasn't a crazy tone of voice. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't how my husband normally speaks when mm-hmm. he's okay. So I came over to see how you were doing. And, you know, just see. And I think I said to you earlier, like, if there is anything that you need from me, just tell me, let me know. I guess so I don't have to guess on how to navigate the waters of these spaces. Mm-hmm. And so as I sat there and I went through asking you, like, if you were okay, to you, it felt like I was digging and prying for you to just go ahead and tell me while you were just naturally still trying to process what you felt.
And I was also in silence that day. I hadn't spoken and you knew I was in one of those moments where I wasn't speaking. Yeah.
So you still trying to process what you were feeling. Mm-hmm. And so I just made it clear that, you know, when you are processing, or I attempted to make it clear, mm-hmm. then when you're processing what you feel, and I'm not privy to the information or what's happening, but a small request like what was last night, I mm-hmm. feel the energy, but I'm not getting any information mm-hmm. on the back end to where it feels like I'm able to think that you're nitpicking because I don't have the other energy, which to you felt like, you know, I'm digging for information, like, mm-hmm. tell me. And so we just had a lot of miscommunication in that moment. and what I was requesting and feeling and what you were requesting and feeling. And so that escalated because you have two people who are passionate about what they feel that also feel like, because both of us were right.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Typically when someone's having a disagreement, one person is wrong. Now that may be both people have things that they could have done better or differently. Mm-hmm. We both had things that we could have done better or differently, but to a large degree, both of us were right. You were right in wanting to process what you felt. Mm-hmm. I was right in feeling the energy of requests not related to what you felt, feeling like it was being taken out on me.
Mm-hmm.
I was right in what I felt, not in that's what you were doing.
Right.
And so in that space of us just expressing what we were, you know, saying, I felt a lot of energy, a lot of explosive energy. And so I'm not going to say I don't do well with conflict. I'm learning how to do well with conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to get to those spaces with people. Mm-hmm. I rather just, like I said before, I just quit talking to you. You know, I just block you. I just won't go. If I have to go to those spaces with somebody, it's not a relationship that I've ever cared to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
So to now be married and have to nurture a relationship through those moments is uncharted territory for me. So I would get up and like, I ain't got time for this. And then 5 seconds later, come back and finish the conversation. And then ultimately we were laughing at some point, but I still ended up getting to a space to where I was like, no, I can't hold it anymore. And it was just so much rage. And I also feel like the rage that I felt is the rage that you felt, the rage of the situation, the rage that everyone in our dynamic that has been holding or trying to work through this dynamic since we first got together.
Mm.
So I was clear that it wasn't just my rage that I was processing. And that was rageful, that it wasn't just mine, that it was a collective rage and 90% mine. But it felt great. Even in the process, I really wanted to keep going. The only thing that allowed me to stop is the fact that you got up and you walked away. That was the only reason why I stopped. It felt like gold was pouring out of my eyes. It felt like the spit that was coming out of my mouth was like the best spit that I ever spewed from my face. It felt like the energy that I had was just orgasmic all over my body.
And powerful.
Extremely powerful. And even as I exploded, I'm like banging on my knees. I'm sitting on the floor and he's sitting in a chair. And I'm banging on my knees. And the only thing that I'm saying is, I'm just trying to love you. I'm just trying to find out what's going on. I'm just trying to be here for you. And I kept saying that I don't care. Like, because I was like, if you don't want to tell me, don't tell me. I don't care. You know, so I just kept saying, I don't care. And I'm just trying to love you. And I don't know what I was saying. Like, I was just blanking out. And I did see you for a moment. And there was the thought of, Candace, don't do that. And then it was the thought of, no, he sees me right now. I'm going for it. It was the very clear indication that you knew that it was probably 1% of me actually yelling at you.
Mm-hmm.
And the other 99% was deep excitement for the fact that I've finally been able to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
I've been rageful for a long time, but it's one thing to go to the smash place and smash glass and TVs. I don't want to do that. I want to be rageful at someone.
Right.
The anger that I've always experienced has come as a byproduct of how people have treated me. So it would make sense that the healthy outlet would be for me to take my anger out on someone, not something.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of me that recognizes that a person needs to be present, whether it's intentionally for them or misplaced is a different topic.
Right.
But in that moment, you were able to hold space and become all of the people that I've always wanted to display rage for, to go off on, to be angry with, and still feel the weight of me yelling of you in that way, but to also know that you aren't even present in this moment. I don't even see you in this moment. All I see is, oh my God, I finally got it out. And I left, obviously, because I'm going to leave. I picked up my stuff. I got my keys. I ain't got time for this shit. Come on, Cleo. I grabbed Cleo. We went to the park. It was hot outside. And I was like trying to continue crying. But I couldn't cry anymore because I was really excited. Mm-hmm. I was happy for myself. I felt a part of me, not fully, but a part of me felt bad that I had yelled at you in that way. Mm-hmm. And then the other part was like, but you weren't yelling at him. You were getting out all of the anger that you've been holding on to for 33 years. Mm-hmm. And so even as I walked and I tried to like be emotional and I tried to see if there was any emotion that I processed, I recognized that I was extremely light. Mm-hmm. I was extremely gleeful almost that I finally had that experience and allowed myself to follow through with it.
Yeah, like I'm even emotional right now. Like, like, cause I knew that's what it was. At a certain point, like you probably yelled for maybe like 2 minutes. So like maybe almost a minute in, I realized what I needed to do in that moment for both of us. And even as you said, it wasn't even just your rage. I'm realizing now that I may have had more leeway in having to be in these spaces. So I may be more adept and not having to go to that degree. But you was able to kind of do it for me, to me, through me, like all at the same time. I'm just kind of realizing that right now. But it hurt. It definitely hurt, and it like it brought up a wound. Yeah, it brought up a wound from when I realized, and I spoke to you about this after the fact, when you were saying, I don't care, and you wasn't saying it the same way, you wasn't saying it about the same thing. I understand. But when I was in Philly, and it was pretty much to the point where I was just trying to do my best as the man of the household to salvage what I had with my son's mother, we had a moment where she also went to a state of rage that I had never seen nobody to that point go to. And it was the same energy. Of course, it was just still love, even in you doing that. But it reminded me of that moment. And I tell people that I feel like my aura cracked in that moment. And she just kept saying, I don't care. I don't care about how you feel. And I know people like, you know, people that's close to us tell me I shouldn't speak about these things.
Yeah,
but
we don't care about
it is
that.
What it is. Like, yeah. This is part of my healing. I'm not doing this to throw nobody under the rug. It is what it is. But
you'll always be allowed to tell your truth. Nobody can rob you from that.
Yeah, but it did, like, it hurt, but it didn't crack me open. And I was able to stand firm once I realized what it was, even prior. Like, I just was looking at you with the blank face, if you remember. Like, I was almost looking into you and through you. And I don't even think there was one wave of being upset with you for going to that degree. But when I did realize what it was, it's almost like the yogis that you may see that we study, and their bodies break down or they get very sick. And people are like, yo, these are these great yogis that can meditate for 18 hours a day for 20 years. Why are they going through this if they so spiritually inclined? And I forgot what the concept is called, but it's pretty much the precept that these yogis are able to take on the karma of their students, karma of whole groups of people, and they process it through their own physical body. And this is when you see sometimes their bodies break down in different ways because they're taking on karma that doesn't even belong to them, because they've processed so much of their own karma, they have the space to be able to do that. And I realized in that moment that's what was necessary. And it wasn't, like you said, it was 90%, but it was still some of mine in there too. So at that point, it wasn't about the logistics of the argument. It was, I need to hold this space right now. And like you said, after you got it out, I had walked away, or you'd still be yelling at me right now. I had went to put my stuff on. I didn't say a word. You had left, and I went and took my walk in 103-degree Houston weather. I was about to take like an hour walk, but I didn't want to pass out and die that day. So I'm like, let me just take a little quick walk. But in me being able to walk, I was able to start to dump and transmute some of that energy out. And right before we got to the point of you exploding, I was starting to be able to see what you was asking for. Like, I should have told you. I didn't have the capacity in that moment, but a lot of this could have been avoided if I initiated, I'm processing, and then said my request. I was able to acknowledge that. You was able to start to acknowledge in certain ways to allow my process to also be my process. But when we came back, you was about to go get an Airbnb, right? And that low-key kind of pissed me off, because it's like, I don't want you to just, like, run away from me. Like, I want us to be able to at least share the same space, even if we're going to be quiet. And we started to talk again. I didn't even know if I should even interject. Spirit said, say what you got to say. And you listen to me. Most people in that rawness, I don't want to talk about it no more. You didn't do that. You listened to me. And you was able to hear me after getting all of that out in the way maybe you wasn't hearing me prior. And we was able to sit right here on this floor, probably right where these chairs are. You start crying. I came and sat behind you, and we was able to kind of just rock each other and get to the degree where you realized, we realized two programs was going to a deeper level of breaking. It was the same program for both of us in two different ways. Savior syndrome, which we've talked about on this podcast. All of that, what on your end, well, a lot of it was you wanted to save me. You know when I don't feel good, you respect my output and how much I dedicate myself to peace and how much I do my best to give that to other people. You respect that so much, probably even more than I respected myself, that you don't like to see me in that space. You want to hold it for me. You want to save me from that. And that's part of what you were saying. Like, you won't let me love you. You're making it hard for me to love you. We was able to realize in that moment that there was a level of savior syndrome that you had an opportunity to let go of, where you don't have to do that with anybody else. Your mom is good. You've understood that your family, they stuff is they stuff. The last piece of the puzzle as far as savior syndrome is your husband now. We was able to realize in that moment, okay, this is an opportunity to let that go. What I had felt prior to us even getting into it and me already being depleted, which is why I couldn't get through the meditation, was savior syndrome as far as feeling like I need to save my son, because he's not being raised in some of the, I mean, he's being still raised beautifully, don't get me wrong, but there are certain things that I feel like could be affecting him in the long run that I don't have any control over. So our argument was low-key our soul saying, y'all need to have this particular exchange to get to the root. Y'all got to hold it down to get there. But once you get to the root, you'll realize this is the same program. You're both helping each other to break in a way that somebody else, if they had a front row seat, they would have said that moment was toxic. That moment was love. You screaming your head off of me was love. Me sitting there taking it, me not giving you the information, all of that was bringing us to the degree of letting go of a deeper level of savior syndrome.
Yeah, I agree. And that was a really tough space to be in, especially because there's so many nuances to our experience. Mm. And also because it's not just you and I, you know, it's me, you, Mahdi, and then the other factor that sometimes makes things a little difficult. Mm. And so for me, that can be frustrating. Mm. And I had to realize that it doesn't feel good when I don't like when anybody treats you a certain way. Mm. That's just the bottom line too. It's like, I do not play about you, especially playing about you when it comes to your son, not having access to your son, not being able to speak to your son, or having interaction with him being made difficult because of how someone feels about you. I don't like that. And so the wanting to like be present and wanting to save and wanting to help and wanting to know was to a very large degree just me like, what can I do, you know? And feeling helpless because that's not my bag. It's not my cross to carry. It's not my karma. And recognizing that I have allowed myself to take on much of that karma, no matter how many times you say, I'm good, I got this, I don't need no help. If I need anything, I know how to use my words and come and ask you. And that to me has been the most difficult part, is watching you have to navigate this space with your son and how difficult it is, and how difficult it's being made to be when it's not necessary for it to be this difficult. That has been extremely hard watching you navigate. And you do it with so much grace. So a lot of the grace that you are giving is why I'm like, oh, hell no. You know what I'm saying? So when I say that 10% of that rage is the things that you wouldn't say to keep the peace, you know, to make sure that you just want to have a relationship with your son. And so a lot of that rage was like all the times where we're being told, don't say anything, be silent, you're making it worse. That's not right. And so if I'm trying to love you, it's like I'm fighting a battle with you. And also hearing you say, I don't need you to do that. So it leaves me like, well, damn, what am I supposed to do? You know, it's like still trying to find my footing in a dynamic that may not include me. You know, it's like me including myself because I really just want to protect you. And so that was a really, really difficult space for us to maneuver through, but we were able to see why it was so necessary for us to break open that part. And it was beautiful for us after the fact.
And you was also able to help me to see, which I spoke about in a live I just did a couple of days ago after Father's Day when I was still in Jersey. But there, of course, is there's no part of me that is, there's no part of my energy that's going in the direction of any other woman, except for the fact, which I see now, until you get to the degree, like I was on the phone with my mom and I was just like, yo, I don't want to have hate in my heart. I don't want to have hate in my heart for nobody. Not even for an instant, but it was difficult in that moment. Like I was kind of losing awareness that even my son's mother is a reflection of what my soul is asking me to experience, to be able to go to the next level. So even with all the angst, it's still a gift. I was forgetting that. I was getting extremely upset. I was getting extremely angry and rageful, but wasn't allowing it to get out. But I realized when I did go to Jersey, and we had broken that program together in each other's arms, and I was able to tell you, I don't need you to save me unless I'm asking you to save me, which I have asked you at certain times when you run me the water in a tub, when you massage me, when we go have a date there, whatever it is. There have been those times. But in breaking that level of the program, I understanding I can't, and it's not my place, even with my son, to push this envelope. So when I went to the Jersey, I had let go of all of that. And I was able to realize probably for the first time that sometimes what you feel, as far as when you say it, it almost feels like I gotta share you with her. Of course, it's not anything sexual or romantic or desirous or nothing like that. I was finally in that moment having let go of that level of the program to understand why it would feel or could feel like that for you, and probably a lot of other women. Men may still feel like that, because until you get to what I call securing a rebound, which I said in the live, with the NBA, with basketball, defense isn't complete until you actually get the rebound. So you stop Kobe, he shoot the shot. If you don't get the rebound, the Lakers get the ball, they're going to run it again. So you got to be able to go through all that defense, but then secure the rebound. I hadn't secured the rebound until that moment of completely letting go of everything. And I thought I had done that with her, but that little last crevice of savior syndrome I had with and for Madi was still kind of opening that door here and there. So I was able to realize that you are still with a person until you get to the point where there is complete forgiveness, acceptance, tolerance, and appreciation of all the angst that they have offered you in y'all experience together.
Just to like expound a little bit on what you mean when it comes to sharing, like we don't mean sexually none of those things, like no type of romantic situation. But what happens typically when a person is in a marriage or a relationship and they still have children with another person, the child is such a sensitive space, mm-hmm. especially in this situation, because you're in a completely different state. And even to a large degree, that's being held over your head, mm-hmm. and it was not your choice mm-hmm. for even this to happen. Facts. Like, it wasn't Facts. Even your choice really for this to happen.
It is what it is.
And so that that your child being that sensitive space, and then having the mom or dad be able to kind of like hold that over your head to a certain degree, to the point to where that be the only thing that can upset you, make you angry, mm. make you rageful, mm. make you annoyed. And so my husband is great in every aspect of his life, where he's very great at managing his emotions, like almost perfect at managing his emotions. So to see that her behavior, which can be unhealthy, and that be the stone that affects you, because it ultimately affects your son, mm-hmm. that being the thing that ultimately like sends you over, it's like, now how long is this behavior gonna have the opportunity to shift your energy? So it felt like the energy was being right. shared. And to a large degree, any person that's still in a blended family, as long as a person has that type of control, even if it's just the control over how your kids are being taken care of, what food they're eating, no matter how small, if that affects you energetically, you're still in that union. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, mm-hmm. you're in the union with me. Yes, you're in the union with whatever person you're physically with. But as soon as you're energetically triggered over there, your energy is over there, and I have a portion of you. So when you went to New Jersey and you were able to, like, you know, tell me that that's something that you acknowledge, that the savior syndrome for Mahdi was like the last token, and even recognizing it's not even necessary for me to save him, still feeling like all of the purity, the love in his heart, and being able to come back to me and, you know, just really say, I feel you. That was like really important for me.
Absolutely. And we went there because that correlated to you being able to go on that stage, and something we're going to talk about as well, as far as the epiphanies we had yesterday.
Yeah.
But having that moment of anger and rage come out the day before you have your biggest moment as a speaker to this point, that opened up certain channels in you to have a level of, like, when you went on the stage, you know, we into battle rap. So I'm like, yo, this your moment. Go tear their head off. You're a battle rapper right now. She's like, you know what? Yeah, and that battle rapper energy is connected to the anger, to the rage.
Yeah.
Once you start to be able to use it, just like with the nervous energy, the angry energy, all these things we want to deflect away from, you start to learn how to use them, how to integrate them, and how to ride them into what you need out of them. So it's no coincidences in life, period, but it's definitely no coincidence that that moment happens the day prior to you dying to a version of yourself that felt too limited to be able to have that moment.
Yeah.
To go on that stage and kill it to the degree that you did. Like, you, at a certain point after the performance, when I was on my way to Jersey, I'm like, yo, make sure you don't bypass that. Make sure you acknowledge the version of yourself that was just born on that stage, the version of yourself that just died. But that portal, I feel like, was open in that moment of the rage coming out. And then that set the precedent for what we was able to experience that night. You want to give the foundation?
The foundation for what?
So you came in the house. We was chilling. It's been beautiful since I've been back. We just been in rest. We exhausted. It's been a lot going on. So this is a rest season, even if it's only going to be a few days for us. But, you know, you had went to get something to eat. And before you did, I had asked you while I was gone, how you been eating? And you was like, I ain't been doing good, right? And this is coming off of probably your longest stint of being on your dean. You had like a whole month where you realized I could do this for an extended period of time. But you know, I asked you and I told you, we're gonna get back to your regimen. So start to plan what you're gonna be eating for the rest of the week. Didn't come at you nothing like that, just a little reminder. We was good. You go out to get your food, you come back, and you come upstairs, and I could feel, just like you could feel me, I felt you. I'm like, what's up? And he was like, I don't know. I just feel like crying. So you put your head in my chest, you start crying, and I thought you was done. Looked at you, I still felt the energy. I'm like, you okay? You're like, I still want to cry. Came back to my chest, and then when you came out of it, I knew it was a source, and you was prepared to just leave it at that. Like, I just felt like tears needed to happen. I don't know where it was coming from, but when I pressed you a little bit as far as my series of questions, you started to dig to the root of what it was, and I want you to start to speak on that.
Yeah, so when the situation happened to where I displayed the rage, you know, for me to display rage is an indication that there's a lot of energy present. I never raise my voice. I never get hostile. So I just don't end up in those type of predicaments. So I also haven't had a lot of, let's say, in this phase of my life, because I have gone off on people that I've been in relationships with when I was like back in the past drinking and stuff like that. But like at this phase of my life, I haven't displayed that or felt that amount of energy in my body, coupled with doing everything for the retreat, like the logistic part, coupled with making sure our Houston healing sessions is, you know, the emails and stuff are in.
The book,
right, coupled with sending out stuff for the book, coupled with also now planning my speech for this tour, and it being a completely different audience, a larger audience, and the nerves that come with that. There was so much energy in my body that wasn't just nervousness or wasn't just fear. It was just energy that I didn't have the time to fully transmute. After we had our moment where I had the rageful moment and we were able to come back and, you know, just love on each other. We went to the Airbnb together. Like, just anytime we get into it right after, once we get back to our regular, we just lovey-dovey like it's nothing. I go into a whole inner child and we just, like, everything's a date. And we just madly in love. And so,
instead of just mad.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, even though I felt great and I felt light, I transmuted our energy. I transmuted a lot of my anger, my rage, but I didn't get to transmute everything. I still had something else to do. And I've also been expressing that I felt stressed, overwhelmed. Yep. You know, I'm doing a lot of things, and it's not like I have to-do lists, because I don't. Like you always say, like, we don't plan none of this stuff. I didn't plan to speak on 19 Keys tour. We didn't plan the Houston healing sessions. It's just like, hey, this is a good idea. Let's put it into place. And it works, you know? And so I don't have to-do lists, but there are things that I'm doing. And then there's back ends that I have to do to keep those things going, which makes me have to do a lot of stuff. And that's been really stressful and overwhelming. And it's been a lot of energy that's just sitting in my body lately, to the point I'm like almost drinking lavender,
right?
Like every minute he's like, man, that's
you about to make me pass out.
Yeah, that's still making my stomach hurt. I'm like pouring it on my hand, I'm sniffing it, and like when I look up the effects of lavender outside the skin, it's for stress, it's to help you calm. And so I'm like, man, I guess I am stressed, I guess I am overwhelmed. So after the 19 Keys tour, I was like, finally, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to be anybody. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to help nobody. I don't have to give no advice. I don't have to have any sessions. There's nothing that I have to do other than be with myself. And that felt great. And you left the next day to go back to New Jersey.
So you had space.
So my mind was like, I'm about to just feel so free to finally just let everything go and just be, just relax. And I had pizza multiple times a day, daily. And
you had your Parmesan?
I did have my Parmesan.
I just told her no more Parmesan.
Yeah, and see, the thing too is my husband is vegan and I am too, but I'm not strict vegan.
Yeah.
You know, I'm, that version of me is like, oh, hey, all right, let's put a little bit of Parmesan on it, you know? And so I had what I had been wanting to have, that version of me that is used to sabotaging. Really just reverted back into the version of myself that is like the sabotage queen. That's like, what is going to make me feel the most human in this moment? And you asked me, you said, how have you been eating? And I said, I've been eating how I feel.
Yeah.
Heavy.
Heavy, yeah.
Stressful, overwhelming, chaotic. So overeating, eating things that are not necessary to eat, and just
and in that moment, not to cut you off, when I asked you that, it was like, you know, I've been eating how I felt, and I can sense your own disdain for that statement.
Yeah,
when you said it, I ain't speak on it. It was just like subtle, but yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, absolutely. It, in those moments, it's also low key, it's a manic state when you're in those moments of sabotaging, whether you're conscious of it or unconscious of it. Those are still emotionally manic states, especially if you don't have the power to bring yourself out of those moments. And so I'm conscious of when I'm self-sabotaging, which is makes me feel even more guilt because I know what I'm doing,
right.
I'm consciously choosing to do it. It's like, I'll deal with the ramifications after the fact, but I'm about to eat this pizza and watch my favorite show. You know what I'm saying? And so the whole time he was gone was supposed to be me rejuvenating. And it was all of the stress that I had been feeling, all of that energy, that overwhelming sensation that's been in my body, finally coming out. And that's what happens when you have these emotional moments or you have these stressors within the body. If the body is too overwhelmed to hold that energy, it's going to manifest in some type of way. It's going to manifest in self-sabotaging behaviors, addictions, the need for constant sex, the need for constant attention to get in a relationship, the need to overeat food. These energies are going to manifest as diseases or cancers or anything, acne on the skin. So this is how I have always chosen to sabotage, which was food. I don't drink anymore. I don't smoke like that. So what is readily available that can give me instant gratification? And it was food. And so in that moment, I didn't feel bad. And then, but I was still trying like every day, like, okay, I'm not going to eat it today. But then the day came and I'm like, I'm a little bit stressed today. I'm going to go ahead and give me some more pizza. But last night when you got home, or last night when I was driving to get me something to eat, I felt really anxious. And I don't actually ever feel anxious.
Right.
So this was a very clear sensation that was in my body. And I got the food and I drove home and I had a thought in my mind because I'm writing another book. And I had a thought in my mind, oh, I need to write this down because it needs to go in the book. And as I'm writing it, I start getting emotional. And I'm like, no, I ain't trying to cry. I'm about to go home and enjoy my food. I ain't trying to cry right now. I just need to write down this little bullet point so I don't forget. I pull up in the driveway and I'm crying, but not like heavy crying. I'm just acknowledging that something's present. And so I come upstairs and I just come to you and I'm like, I feel like I need to cry. And I just lay on your chest and I cry. And, you know, after my crying moment, you asked me, like, what do you feel? And at first I was just like, I think I just needed to cry. Like, I didn't have anything to name it. I didn't see a purpose in naming it, but I didn't know what it was connected to. But this is another thing that happens when you eating like you ain't got no business. And when you're eating your emotions and when you are stressed and you don't know how to properly transmute that energy, your emotions will not be balanced. How you feel about yourself will not be balanced. Mm. How you see the world will always be distorted. Your perception of all things will be distorted. That's why they have the saying, if you're not eating right, you're not thinking right, because it makes everything in your body unbalanced. Now that I think about what you said about the ice, and we'll get to that too. But that is what happens when you are eating in a way that does not resonate with the body. So when I have clients and like, I'm just so depressed, the first thing I ask them is, what are you eating? Mm-hmm. Because it matters. If you are eating fruits and foods that are alive, that feel good to you, that is going to send the energy in your body of things that feel good. It's going to thrive. It's going to come alive. If you're eating foods that are dead or things that are constantly processed, then your body is going to have to work overtime to process the unnatural things that you're putting into your body. And so now you're trying to claim peace, but everything within your being is unbalanced. And so it's only natural for your emotions to reflect being unbalanced. Mm. However, with me in the moment, I know that. Obviously, I've been having this wisdom for a very long time, but when you're in that space of that manic space, you don't fully see yourself, because it's like, no, I just feel stressed.
Right.
And you're like, well, what's wrong? Really, what you were saying, well, let's dissect why you are stressed. Mm-hmm. And then I got to acknowledge, well, I have been eating pizza, because we're going to talk about it. Then right. Let's go ahead and talk about
it. I already felt food was it,
yeah.
But I just didn't want to put it out there before you led us to it. And it's deep, because there was so many synchronicities yesterday, and we got to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because when you picked me up from the airport, there was tears. I think we should be good.
Yeah, we could.
When you picked me up from the airport, there was a little tears that came as you was driving. Mind you, I'm depleted, I'm exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
Usually I'm driving, but she driving through the traffic, and she was just like, you know, I asked her how she been feeling, how's her heart, and she was like, you know, I was crying a little bit earlier and the tears started to come a little bit, and she was like, I don't know if I feel depressed, I'm not really sure what it is, but there's something here that's making me feel a little heavy. And we started to talk through it, and when you got to the degree where you realized that all that energy you had to hold on your way to the moment, didn't have in the moment. And if y'all have ever performed, especially if you've done well, you know there's a euphoria that comes with that for a few hours, a few days, whatever it is for you. And as that dips down, something that you may have been anticipating for a week for you, but sometimes for years, and you finally get it, and that wave ends of euphoria, and it's just like, that's not what I thought it was going to be. And it pretty much brought me back down to either neutrality or even lower than what I felt before. And you almost feel bad for feeling that, because you like, I just accomplished something beautiful. It lasted for a few hours and then it's just like blah, right? So you was kind of in that space when you picked me up and you felt.
And the thing is too, for me, It doesn't necessarily feel like euphoria. If like that euphoria feels like stress in my body. Mm-hmm. And so coming out of that, it didn't feel like I went to my normal self.
Right.
It felt like I could just let go of all the stress. Right. Yeah. Right.
Man, even in that conversation, you also was able to talk about the back-to-back-to-back ventures that Spirit has been pushing you to do. And you was able
since February,
and we was able to even calculate. I'm like, all right, well, how long you feel like you've been going full throttle? And we literally counted February to this day, and it's pretty much been 5 months. So even though you felt like to a certain degree there was sabotage in how much you allotted for yourself to during this time, I was able to express to you all of it was necessary. All of it had to happen in the way it has. But maybe you are realizing, okay, my new regimen is I can't do more than 5 months of maxing out. And if I'm going to do more than that, I'm not going to, like, let's say I do 7, I'm not going to max out. I'm going to do 40% as opposed to the 100% for 5 months for the 7. So you was able to kind of get an idea of your circadian rhythm in your output. And then I was also able to indicate to you something that I wanted to talk about real quick. So with the chakras, there are 114 chakras. A lot of people don't realize that. The main seven chakras kind of get all of the credit, but there are these intermediate chakras a lot of people don't understand. And when you start to open up in your heart, we good? When you start to open up in your heart, which we refer to as anahata, and mind you, my wife has literally been talking about wanting to have a softer heart and doing a lot of work on, you know, being able to express love and compassion and understanding in the relationship she's had with her friends and going to a higher level of communication. She's done a lot of heart work. When you do so, you start to open up to those intermediate chakras. And a lot of people have never heard of this. It's called HRIT, which I believe is pronounced HRIT. Right. So this is the HRIT chakra, also known as Surya, right? S-U-R-Y-A. Y'all could do some research on this. And this is a chakra that isn't easily activated. But when you do enough work on that anahata, when you are in intimacy with Source as much as we are, your ability to create at the speed of thought and even intention before it becomes thought, it increases. So they literally refer to this chakra as the wish giving or the wish fulfilling tree. It sits right underneath the heart chakra. So I was able to express to her that now you have to be so cognizant of what you think, of where you allow your mind to go, because whatever your attention settles on for even a brief second, it's going to start to create it, whether you want it or not. We was driving and we saw the word closing, and I use that as an example. Like, you're at the point where even if you see closing in your periphery, you don't even give your attention to it, but your subconscious mind downloaded closing. That could turn into, you know what, I want to buy a house, or I want to buy a new property. We actually been looking at properties as we walk around our environment when we do our little walks, and you're like, you know, I think I may want to buy something. These little pockets of information come in very quickly and very easily turn into new thoughts, new desires, new endeavors that really don't even belong to you. But you've activated this HRIT chakra, and now before you know it, you got 5 months of work. You got a year of work, and now you feel overwhelmed, which then turns into the compensation, which is the self-sabotaging you're talking about with the food.
Yeah, because if you think about it, and I've always known that I was a very powerful manifester. Before human design, you know, that's not something that I'm really into. It doesn't mean that it's not true. But before that, and that is my human design, come to find out. Yeah. So I knew that I was a powerful manifester, which is something that I learned that how I did it was by manipulating energy, which was why I could always receive it, but couldn't maintain it because I didn't know how to maintain the energy that I was manipulating. I just knew how to have that surge of power to get what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about it and how you just broke it down, because I'm like, most of the things that I'm like doing right now, to a large degree, I really ain't asked for. To a large degree, I don't have goals written down. Right. I don't have what I want my life to look like in the next year, the next 5 years, how much money I want to make. Mm-hmm. I don't have any of those things written down. So where are these things coming from?
Yeah.
Obviously, now we know my mama planted the seed for the book.
Mm-hmm.
She's been planting that seed the book since I was like 16.
Right.
And so why would the book randomly come to me in February? Mm-hmm. We weren't doing anything in February to where it was like, it's time to write a book,
right?
You know? So that was also an indication for me to start practicing on honing in on my power. That does feel like a superpower to me, to be a very powerful person that can attract in anything.
Right.
And because I want to attract in these things, but I also want to have enough spiritual stamina to be able to maintain them and not let other people's thoughts. Because even after the 19 Keys, people was like, oh, it's Oprah next.
Right.
It's Tabitha Brown next. You know, it's all of these other entities next. And it's like, Yeah, it is, huh?
Right. And then Hrit Chakra is just downloading all of this and starting to spew it into your environment sometimes in spaces where you don't have enough stillness between right. to be able to appreciate and follow it through without getting exhausted.
Yeah, because they chilling. Yeah. They just like yeah. giving me all the, it's Oprah next. And right. I'm like, who gonna have to work towards Oprah? Exactly. It's like giving me more work. Right. And so it's there's the part that's like kind of fearful in that area, but the part where you were reminding me yesterday and last night is just going back to those spiritual practices. Mm-hmm. When we allot that space in between of the doing
mm-hmm. and the desire. Yep.
And the desire, because I mean, if I'm honest, I don't know that there's any desire to do any of the things that I'm doing.
Right.
There wasn't a desire to do a book. I was in a portal that felt like it was doing it for me.
Right.
There's not a desire to do, honestly, none of the things that mm-hmm. I'm doing. There's no like crazy, like, oh my God, like I can't wait to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that these are portals that Source is saying, nah, this mm-hmm. is what's next. And I'm honoring those portals. But I want to be able to honor these portals and do things that I desire without burning out.
Exactly.
And I have not gotten to the place to where I've learned how not to burn out. That's why Sasha Flowers closed down.
Right.
Because I burnt out. It mm-hmm. was a lot of work. So you telling me that was really necessary for me to hear, knowing that there is a superpower that's present
mm-hmm.
and I have to learn how to nurture it.
Right. And that's why you see a lot of the yogis, again, that we study, they end up becoming renunciates, because it's not like any of what you did was against the grain of your spirit. But when you start to activate this Hrit Chakra and your wishes start to come true, like a large part of my life, I deem myself Mr. Murphy's Law. Anything that could go wrong, would go wrong, bad luck guy, all this other stuff. I'm on the complete opposite end of that. And to a certain degree, this chakra opens up not to just be a genie, not to just give you everything just because. It's doing its best to teach your soul that even if you exhaust all of what you deem as success, it's still not going to be it. Like you just sent me what Cardi B said a couple days ago on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
She literally said having everything gets very boring, right? So this chakra opens up to allow you to have fun on that ride as you're doing all this different stuff. But it's really expediting your process to get to a point where you realize even if I receive the whole world, it's not going to mean anything more than when I close my eyes and when I connect to myself. That's my real center. That's my real source. And that's really the purpose of the hit chakra, not just to give you wishes, but for you to expedite your process and get into that point. And what you were able to also realize, like the synchronicity of that day. When I first moved in here, I started to realize one of your patterns that your mother also spoke to you about at different times, where there'll be a moment where you're like, yo, I'm about to be on my stuff. I'm about to make my juices. And you'll go buy all this stuff, bags of celery. I couldn't even put nothing in the refrigerator when I first got here. And I started to put some of your bags of kale in the freezer because I was recognizing you wasn't using it. You could save it for later. Of course, you don't want frozen kale. So, but they've been in there since I moved in pretty much 9 months ago, right? Before we even got to that moment, all of a sudden, as we just doing things in the kitchen, I threw the bags of kale out, right? Had no idea what conversation was going to come later, right? So that's one indication. Before she came back to the house, she set our house up so beautifully to accommodate my energy. So it's been 3 books that she's put on my, nightstand that's been there since I moved in. I've read all of the books when I first started, but I've never been compelled to pick up one of those books. While she was gone, I'm about to watch something on Netflix. Mind you, I'm exhausted. I just want to be regular. Started watching Beyonce's Homecoming, right?
Okay, I know that's right. I didn't know that.
I'm like, I'm gonna hold off on this.
Before, I'm gonna save
yeah,
this.
I'm gonna save this when it's time for us to actually go see Beyonce. She did get tickets, y'all, so y'all can hit on her afterwards. But something was like, nah, turn this off. It ain't time to watch TV. And I was compelled to reach to my nightstand, pick up one of the books. Initially, it was Cultivating Female Sexual Energy, which I recommend all the time. I've read it. Started to read it. It was like, nah, not this one. Started to read the other one by Montauk Chia, which was Awakening the Tao of Healing. And right before she came home, I'm reading a section that made me think of her, because this is the Ice Queen. She literally every single day has 2 to 3 big sonic cups of ice.
Around anywhere, 44.
Anywhere we go, any restaurant. I even know if I'm going to go pick up some food, I'm going to make sure I tell them, can I have a cup of ice to bring back to my wife? I've always understood the energy of that, because when you aren't eating like room temperature or warm things, your system, your digestive system, your prana is a warm energy. So when you put cold things in it, it has to do extra work to break down the coolness and bring it back to your natural homeostasis, which is warmth. And that throws off your energetic and emotional profile. I've understood this, but it hasn't been at the forefront of my consciousness because I learned that so long ago. And it's just so much a part of my rhythm. I do room temperature stuff.
And it feels like common sense.
Right. And again, like the stuff we talking about, like with food, this is not crack. This is not alcohol. Right. It feels like, bruh, it's just food. Like y'all got to relax. But I reread that part where it talks about cups of ice, chilled fruit. I'm like, damn, like maybe I should have a conversation with her about this or send this to her, but not today. Not knowing she's going to come in the house, cry, and have that moment where she realizes I'm back at this space again and I really want to break this version of myself. And you said something super deep. When we talked about this rhythm of you getting the stuff and then not using it, you was like, because, and I'm glad that you were able to respect that space as my husband, which my mother wasn't able to as much. You was like, the version of myself that goes to the store to get all this stuff to do it, by the time I get home, she not here no more. Now it's the version of myself that wants the salty food, that feel like I just did all this work and I deserve, and I'm emotional and I'm heavy, so I got to eat that way. By the time I get home and for that next 2 to 3 days, she's here. So all that food goes bad. I want you to speak on that too.
Yeah. So I always speak about how the average person has multiple personalities. And so we may not have it diagnosed medically as DID, which is dissociative identity disorder, but the average person has many personalities. And so there's a Chinese proverb that says something to the effect of, who you are when you're with your friends is a different version of you. Who you are when you're with your coworkers is a different version of you. Who you are when you are with your parents, a different version. Who you are with your grandparents is a different version. But who you are by yourself is the truest version of who you really are. So just alone, that's at least 5 different personalities, not even including the personalities that are fragmented, that are created from places of trauma, wounds, and voids based on childhood or growing up. So there's a version of me that sabotages through addictive behavior and food, right? So when I'm speaking about versions of myself, it's very important for me to acknowledge that I'm not speaking about 33-year-old Candace. I'm speaking about the person who is struggling with the program,
right?
The version that created the program so they could feel comfortable, safe, loved, seen, heard, or acknowledged. Obviously, this version of Candace utilizes food to make her feel comfortable, to take away any stress. This is why 9 times out of 10, it's the same version of Candace that was addicted to alcohol that allowed alcohol to be used to escape reality, to escape whatever emotion is present. So now that alcohol is not a part of the program, she just utilizes food. And so I used to go, and I've said this so many times, when it came to alcohol, I would buy the alcohol and every day I would quit. Like every day I'd be like, this is my last day drinking. But the next day I would feel a stressor and I would utilize alcohol again. So it's the same thing with food. Typically when a person ends an addictive behavior, they replace it with something else. Whether it's traveling, TV, a relationship, sex, or food, 9 times out of 10 is gonna be food or cigarettes or smoking or something like that. And so mine was food, like the average person. And I would buy super healthy food, very conscious of what I need to feel good, because I've done extensive research in this place. But the person that does the research is not typically the person that's going to eat the food. This is why you can listen to a podcast, you can read the books, you can spend thousands of dollars on the courses and the seminars, because the person that went to the seminar is the one that wants to change. The one that doesn't want to change is the one that has most control, which is why you never implement all of the things that you learn, is because that there's a different version of you that is so powerful that it's like, we'll do it next week. That's 2 different versions. The one that's like, I can't wait to get healthy. And then the one that's like, we'll start Monday. So that's very important to acknowledge. So I would be one version of myself where I'm like, I can't wait. I'm about to go and get all my juices. The one that craves mangoes. But by the time I got home, taking all of the groceries out of the car, putting them in the refrigerator, is so stressful. It's like, I need something to make me feel better. I need a treat. I need something that is going to help me relax. And I ain't trying to eat no damn mango, and I ain't trying to drink no damn green juice. That's a different version of me that than the one that was deeply excited. And my mama used to say, why would you go get all of these groceries? She thought it was actually something wrong. She was like, do we need to have a conversation? Because I would go and buy groceries and leave them on the island. I wouldn't even put them in the refrigerator. I didn't have the vocabulary at that time to articulate the version that was excited about this food is not present. The one that just wants to go and eat pizza and watch TV and just disappear, that's who's present right now. And she could care less about putting these groceries away. So when you were asking me the questions last night, and I just acknowledged they're two different people. That's why there is able to be so many healthy foods in the refrigerator. But healthy Candace is not present. Self-sabotaging Candace is present. And she don't even want to open the refrigerator.
Right.
And it was necessary for me to acknowledge that is because this is how subtle the personalities are. If a person is hiding $1 million, are they going to tell you where it is? Are they going to disclose their hiding location? No, because they want their money to still be there. So when a person has multiple personalities, they don't want to expose the personality. They don't want to tell the person their hiding spot, because now the person can fully see who they are. And so my personality of food has been hiding and lying dormant. And I had to tell my husband that there's another version of me present, so I could expose her. So when she shows up in subtle ways, like just adding extra salt to food, that's a subtle way of saying that there's a version of me that is ready to sabotage. I don't need extra salt, right? The version of me who is
crunching the ice,
or even though it's healthy chips, it's still chips that have salt on them. So it's still a subtle way to have a slippery slope to eating in ways that are unnecessary or unhealthy. Not unnecessary, but unhealthy. And so I had to tell my husband, there's two versions of me that are present in these moments. And I had to even tell him the signs to recognize when this version of me shows up. So you're clear, you're not talking to the Candace that's excited about making green juices for both of us. You're talking to Candace that can't wait to figure out, when are you not going to be looking so I can put extra salt in my food?
Right. And it went beyond acknowledging it to me. In that moment, she was there and you was able to realize that, like you said, nobody knew you was alcoholic, because you would come home and do that by yourself. You didn't want nobody to see that version of the sabotager.
And I'm a only child, so I am perfect at hiding in plain sight and solitude.
Right. Yeah. And you was also able to say part of why we did so well with the long distance, because there was a little apprehension of me coming into the space and her being exposed to a certain degree. And in that moment, as we was talking through it, you was able to almost talk to her. I mean, I was just standing there present on the sideline, but you was like, being that she's gotten so accustomed to hiding, this version of you has gotten so accustomed to her kind of just being there, being that elephant in the room that you don't talk about, that you know when she pops up, but you don't acknowledge her. You don't recognize, all right, you here, almost like she's a whole nother individual. And I kind of refer to it as cell division, or we can call it self division. All the time in our body, cells are dividing and becoming separate entities. So in that moment, I was able to watch you, and you were able to experience the cell divide. And now you can look at her as if she's a whole nother entity. And from now on, I'm not going to pick up the Parmesan or the ice and not recognize, oh, she's here right now. I got to make accommodations for recognizing she's here, and when she does show up, how to allow her to go back into the recesses of my subconscious mind. So we started to talk about that. I asked you how I could help, and instead of maybe making suggestions about, you know, not doing an ice day or whatever it is, if I recognize one of those things happening, asking, is she here? That's all I got to do. I don't have to even give the dynamics or details of the suggestion, just holding that mirror up and me being in your presence in a, I think, a graceful way in how I've handled it. And you say it like, nah, you be on point every time suggest, which is not often. I give you all the space and not like legit non-judgment. When you're doing your thing, I'm not side-eyeing you. Yo, live your life. Right. But every now and then I feel compelled to say something. But now it's not just a matter of me seeing it. When you recognized in the Bible, they say to really exorcise a demon, you got to know its name. You have to identify it and call it by its name for it to understand, oh, somebody's here that recognized me. You were able to do that in that moment last night, and now you are able to create a game plan for yourself and for her, not to badmouth her, not to be mad at her, but just to recognize when she does show up and realizing you have the power to choose other than her.
Yeah, because if you think about it, when we start talking about these other versions of ourselves, these fragmented versions, yes, to a large degree, you know, she may feel some relaxation in her world when it comes to this self-sabotaging behaviors. But 90% of that time, it is deeply uncomfortable. Mm. I've never met an alcoholic that was enjoying being an alcoholic and all the things that he or she suffered from being an alcoholic. Me being an alcoholic was agony. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't stop. Right. And so even recognizing the version of me that only knows how to sabotage, wanted to be exposed, wanted to be acknowledged, wanted to have the flashlight shined on her so she could receive some type of help in that space. Mm. And so, because it doesn't feel good.
Right.
Like people say all the time, they'll eat the food and right after they finish, the truth of how they feel comes out. Mm. Why did I just
do that? Yeah.
And then they feel guilty. That is the version of you that just sabotaged. That's like, I can't believe I just did that to myself again. And so identifying and naming the version of yourself that is appearing gives you the opportunity to form a relationship with that version. So it's not to demonize her.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if she's doing this, these are the only tools that she knows. Mm-hmm. And so my job is to create a relationship with her. I've already done that, but this shows that it's a very deep program.
Mm-hmm.
And so the relationship with her has to be like a real toddler showing up,
right,
checking in, asking questions. Do you need to potty? Do you need to go to the restroom? Do you feel any sensation today? Do you feel anything in your body today? What do you need? Make sure you're using your words. Constantly checking in like she's a toddler because she doesn't have the tools to understand how to communicate what she feels. She just knows when the sensation is present, eat.
Right.
And so my job, because I do have the tools, means that I have to keep returning home to myself intentionally, which also looks like mapping out behaviors. You see it on the movies all the time. Like, say there's a movie and say it's like a scary movie and it's about ghosts, and they're trying to pick out like, how do I know when the ghost is going to show up? Repetition. Right. They just start paying attention to behaviors and patterns. And this is how they beat the course or make sure they don't get eaten or killed by the ghost. And so you acknowledge the ghost's repetition, their patterns, their behaviors. When does she normally show up? She typically shows up either on day two of me eating healthy, or if I experience any stress, or at nighttime when there's nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is why they say if you have an addictive behavior, make sure you replace it with something healthy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when I stopped drinking alcohol, I got into photography and I bought me a bike and I went out in nature and started camping.
Mm-hmm.
So in this instance, I have to also be mindful of, when does she typically show up? Create a game plan, not to catch her, but a game plan to just acknowledge, I knew you would be here today.
Right.
I knew you would come at this time.
Right.
And instead of meeting her with the pizza that she's normally used to, now I can meet her and give her a green juice, mm-hmm. which is right here ready and waiting for me. Preparation, mm-hmm. which is something that you have been really reminding me about. When I'm prepared and this version of myself
she has less
shows
room.
Up,
yeah.
she has way less room to act out. Now I can give her what she needs. It may not feel good. It may not be what she wants. Mm-hmm. Having an accountability partner also is helpful to be able to say she's here. Mm-hmm. She wants ice, right? She wants this. She wants that. And I don't want a damn green juice right now.
Mm-hmm.
But still giving myself permission to express that and say it is also giving her permission to almost be like in therapy.
Mm-hmm. And then you are able, the last thing I say probably is you're a few different things. You're also able to meet her halfway when necessary. Like we was talking about, maybe in some of those moments where you crunching the ice, it is a form of her helping you to get out aggression, to get out anger.
Stress.
So there's a nobility there. Maybe instead of the ice, we already talking about different options, but maybe licorice root sticks or whatever it is. So you can still have some semblance of that crunch in a way that's not going to throw your equilibrium off. The other part of it, you was able to recognize how stealth, how cunning she could be, where your rhythm, if it's an extended period of time, you said for the most part, when you like really on your stuff outside of this longest one you had, which was the month. But previous to that, it's been like 2 weeks. So you was able to identify when I first get back on it, there's that excitement, I'm back on it. That will last about 2 days. When that tapers off, that's her first doorway to come in. If I'm able to get through that, usually I'll keep it going. And in 2 weeks, I'm exhausted with the process. So that means not only accommodating and preparing for extended periods of time to be able to be on your team with the health, to understand it's about day 11. We talking about 14 days, which is her usual regimen of saying, nah, we about to go back. I got to make some accommodations for day 11 to understand she's on her way in 3 days. So I need to have some things in place to be able to be uber attentive to recognizing when she wants me to make that call for my or get the Parmesan cheese or whatever it is. I'm going to have mechanisms in place to recognize her and to, if necessary, meet her halfway or choose otherwise. But you got to be able to do these scouting reports on yourself to be able to recognize that. I think that may be it on my end.
Yeah, I think that's all too. I know that food is a very, very tough topic for people. Mm-hmm. It's a very necessary topic for people because everybody has to eat. And I think what happens for me is I have figured out ways, and this is something that Alan Watts says, and it's so beautiful, and I ain't gonna be able to say it as drunkenly eloquent as he does. But Alan Watts will refer to the ego, and he'll always say that the reason why a person can't unmask the ego is because right when you acknowledge that you found the ego evolves to the higher self.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, I read this book. I feel enlightened. When at first the ego was like, I'm gonna read this book in a week. Now it's like, oh, I read this book. I feel enlightened. The ego just continues to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get rid of it. And so in the space of acknowledging like food and acknowledging where you are in your process of your eating, it's very important that you are in a space of finding what works for you,
right,
and not going with fads, because it can easily be like, I'm gonna do a 90-day juice fast,
right,
which is what I've done many times. I can get to 90 days and then recognize it was a lot of ego and me putting a timeline on how long I was gonna go instead of consulting with my body on how long it needed to go. And the ego is like, is it going to be the version of you that's going to sabotage, or is it going to be me? And a lot of times it's difficult for the version of yourself to sabotage because you've limited the ways that it can sabotage. It's either going to drink the juice for 90 days or it's going to mess up the 90 days and eat.
Right.
but you're still entertaining ego, even though you aren't entertaining the version of you that wants to sabotage. So being very clear on when both of those entities are present allows you to be a lot more balanced in your process.
And real last thing I'll say, I think it was poignant. I think this could be helpful. When you start to do the diligence of recognizing the sabotagers, those characters within your consciousness, we was able to see and you was able to acknowledge that some of the sabotaging energy in that character, that her, was wrapped up in your idea of freedom. So when you was doing some of these things, yes, you may have known it's not the best thing for me, but it felt like freedom. Freedom is a beautiful thing and what we all want. So I would definitely express to you guys to like do your research into yourself, to be able to see where you may have interwoven or connected the self-sabotaging to freedom, because it makes you feel good for a moment, for an hour. You feel free for that little bit of time before you dip back down and realize, I shouldn't have did that to myself. A lot of times we keep these relationships so long because they're interwoven in the fabric of our idea of freedom, and we got to be able to separate those two things, which you did upstairs last night.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
So episode 14 is in the books. We'll get to the car another day. That's a whole other conversation, but I think we good for this week.
Yeah. All right, y'all. If you have any questions about anything that we said, please feel free to send us messages, DMs. Also, if you want any advice, we got to get back to doing that.
Yeah.
If you're someone who needs advice, that wants guidance, you can send us your question. You can email it. Our emails are on both of our Instagram accounts. You can DM us whatever your question is or whatever you need advice on. We'll read it. Mm-hmm. You can tell us if you want to be anonymous or if you want us to state your name, we can do that as well. What else?
And if you
want
to sponsor an episode for us to promote what you do on our podcast, or at least in the promotion on social media, hit us up about those logistics. Of course, the book, Remember Who the F You Are. Still doing the bi-weekly Healing Houston sessions. So contact us about that. That's been going beautiful. We had about 80 people out there last week, people signing up every day. So, yeah.
All right, y'all. We will see y'all in the next episode.
Peace.